Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the podcast studio. Spring break edition with my dear friends and colleagues, the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg and the Reverend Professor Jason Oakland. We should have cleaned up that beach ball and brought it in here for our spring break edition. We have a very disgusting beach ball in the hallway that was in Wisconsin Ave. I think Joel is right that it probably came out of that retention pond that they're digging up across the street.
Oh, yeah.
But I've been telling my students, you guys, there's a free beach ball out there for several days, and then it made its way to my office in the hallway, and we've used our feet, we've kicked it, but I've not touched it because it looks very dirty, but we should bring that in here for our spring break edition. It is warm here in Wisconsin. We have the studio window open. In early March, it's about 60 degrees, and so we are enjoying that and doing what we love most, which is talking to you all. Because, Jason, how do we feel about our listeners?
We love our listeners.
That is very true. And we are part of the 1517 Podcasting Network. You can go to 1517.org and check out all the good stuff there. I encourage you to do so. Our topic today is going to be dealing with kind of the monastic impulse that we all have. And I wouldn't say it's even specifically a Christian thing. It's a very human thing because this shows up in other religions and philosophies too. You have, right, a Plato, but then you have Diogenes, right? You have these impulses,
but then you have lots, you know.
I think, I mean, you could find this probably in almost every stream of thought. What should we do with these things? And so I'm tempted. I can't remember what this movie was. I know it was a movie in the 80s. Wasn't there a movie, No Retreat, No Surrender? It was like a karate movie, I want to say. Yeah. I'm tempted to call this No Retreat, No Surrender. There was a very popular book for a while. Was it Dreher who wrote it? I can't remember. The Benedict Option, right? The idea of should we withdraw, named after, I believe, Benedict of the Benedictine Rule.
Benedict of Nursia.
Yeah, this Western monasticism. And I don't say, when I say the monastic impulse, I'm not saying that everything about monasticism is bad. There's wonderful prayer, worship, work that has been done by monastics over the years, and not all monastics are about withdrawal. Many are going into the world and doing things.
We got to be careful as Lutherans that we realize that even in the Reformation age that there's a little bit of a caricature there.
Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to use it, the monastic impulse. Mm-hmm. And to define it, what I mean simply is the temptation to pull back, to withdraw from neighbor or from the world in the face of what seems to be challenges or difficulties. And so in the previous episode, we talked about specifically technology. We reacted to a passage from a Carl Truman article in First Things and how it seems technology, which we had this great hope was going to make us more human, is maybe making us redundant as human beings, in that way then making us less human, perhaps, and the challenge that comes with that. And Mike had brought up in that discussion, you know, the temptation can be to say, well, then I'm just going to get rid of my phone. I'm not going to have technology anymore. My kids, you know, won't go on the computer. And that doesn't solve anything either because it doesn't teach you how to balance and utilize things that are kind of necessary in order to serve and love your neighbor. The idea of I'm just going to homestead and get by is just not practical for most people in our day.
Yeah. But how do we... Ironically, like, the more tools you have to connect with other people, like we're at one of the loneliest, like the mark of loneliness is higher than it's almost ever been.
And so how do we as Christians uphold vocation in the midst of all these things? And so I think this is, while you're exactly right, Michael, sometimes the Reformation presented a caricature of monasticism. Although I mean, Luther didn't, but he had been a monk, right? But or a friar, how do we stay rooted in the catechisms which in their treatments of the commandments make clear that the commandments don't call us out of the world, but send us right into it. Don't call us away from neighbor, but actually kind of remove the boundary between me and neighbor. So how do we navigate that? That's what we're going to be talking about. Maybe we'll call it no retreat, no surrender. I swear it was a karate. As a kid, I just remember like doing like these, you know, no retreat, no surrender. Maybe it was a Karate Kid thing. I don't know. We will have to find out. But that will be our topic, and so we will go ahead and make our way into it. If one of you would be so kind as to give us our disclaimer.
This show doesn't speak for our churches or church bodies or our employers. To be honest, much of the time it probably doesn't speak for us. We'll be thinking out loud a lot. So approach what you hear with a healthy skepticism, because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast. So go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
Did you find it, Jason?
Yeah.
Is it a karate movie?
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, see, I knew it.
It's boxing.
Yeah.
Is it? Boxing. I just remember me and my friends, like, we'd line up to fight, and that'd be like a thing we would say before we'd fight.
Jason moves to Seattle with his parents, where bullies harass them without mercy.
Yeah.
Jason's father does not believe in violence, so the family takes it on the chin. Jason enrolls in a martial arts class. And from there...
Almost every karate movie involves bullying. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
Or boxing maybe movie as well, but... Okay. We're going to go with that as a name for the episode then. All right, we're at our main topic. We'll hop right back in there. And Jason, you just got to mention... One of the most famous Jasons, maybe.
Maybe.
Is No Retreat, No Surrender Jason. That's I'm trying to think of other famous Jasons.
Yeah. There's Jason Alexander.
Who's that? Oh, that's Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, yeah.
Jason and the...
Jason Bateman.
What about the Argonauts?
Yeah.
Has there ever been a famous Jason politician?
It's hard to take seriously.
It is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Was it Jason Mussolini?
Like there's no. There's no like Jason Kennedy.
Right.
Or Caleb Kennedy. You know what I mean?
Like a great artist like Jason Michelangelo.
No, not in the Renaissance era for sure.
All right. Michael, I'm gonna throw it to you first. I know you've with baptismal life and vocation, you've talked about these things before. There's definitely a time in the Christian life for withdrawal. Even Jesus sometimes goes right elsewhere,
comes back
to pray, but then he comes back. Sometimes when he does that, though, he even brings community. In a sense, he brings three people with him, three apostles. So this is not that you never need time to yourself or time alone with God, but the idea of is there a place, and I'll say within Lutheran theology, for the monastic impulse, by that if we mean that we just kind of pull away from the world because it seems it's getting too bad, too challenging, or we just grow tired of it, is that an option? How does this connect to vocation? Anything like that? I'll let you go ahead and run with Michael.
So let me say from the outset that this whole idea of taking time for yourself, whether it be spiritually or physically recharged, is a good thing. We routinely pray for Thanksgiving for the gift of rest, right? And this too is vocational, because when you are given a sabbatical, when you're given a time for a vacation, when you have been given the means to do things with your family that are relaxing, those are other people in their vocations, right, serving you. Right, and so vocation is not just about you serving neighbor.
Are you saying this because I might get a sabbatical?
And you are getting a sabbatical.
I may. Always.
But and you shouldn't feel guilty about those things, right? We're not saying that all rest is bad. What we are saying here is that there's a natural impulse to just leave it behind, and like you said before, this is not unique to religion, philosophy. I mean, how many times do we just be like, ugh, I'm just done with work, and I just want to go away and shut off my shut off my phone or whatever.
It's like 2:30 every day for me.
Yeah. Who would not want to go, you know, into the wilderness for whatever? Who would not want to do that? And maybe there's some people that say, well, I love the city or whatever. Well, you can escape within the city.
Yeah, so there's plenty of people in the city who escape within the city.
And maybe even more so, or have more opportunities to do that. So the question becomes, I suppose, why do you have this impulse to leave? And for a lot of people, it's self-righteousness. It may be kind of like, this is a bad way to term it, but a pure self-righteousness, mm-hmm. in the sense, like, I want to be holier. So
you're disgusted with others, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So the city is bad. It's too much. There's too much temptation. And so I'm going to go like the desert fathers, maybe. I'm going to go study. I'm going to dedicate myself to the Lord. This is a pious impulse, but I think it's still a law-oriented attempt at your own righteousness. Now, for the regular person, you know, working in a cubicle that wants to get away, that's also a self-righteousness, because these people stink and they're terrible and they make my life, you know, if it was just me, then there wouldn't be any problems. Well, that's a different kind of self-righteousness, right? And that impulse to just go away from, to retire from work, to, you know, leave the city and go out into the country, all those things, very often are driven by a disgust of neighbor. And when we talk vocation, we talk about sinner saint. It's in all things we should be talking sinner saint. The sinner looks at the neighbor as an annoyance, something in the way, something to be used, where the saint sees the neighbor as a delight. And so if you're so curved inward that you leaving makes you more spiritual, or you leaving because you just don't want to deal anymore, you have not even contemplated what neighbor is. And an extreme version of this, and an unholy one, would be suicide, right? Where you are, I want to get out of this world so bad, but you haven't thought about the neighbors that you leave behind, right? So this monastic impulse is with all of us as a disgust at the, either as a disgust at my neighbor, or I don't trust myself in here, so I need to go away. So, you know, we talked about like Confucianism versus Taoism. Confucianism says go into society and here are the rules to find harmony. Taoism would say go into nature to find harmony, mm-hmm. away from that.
And these streams often do see like nature as a preserve, yeah. from, I mean, it really is like humanity is like a taint, you know, like it's humanity's ruining a thing, you know, it's a poison. And we see some of this in environmentalism, yep. today, yep. of, you know, humanity is the problem. And I mean, many of the early monks in Europe play a very important role in cities and villages that later grow, because they're going into nature, but then they're building monasteries and they're working and they're clearing forests,
preserving,
digging
knowledge.
Wells. Yeah, and they therefore play a very important role as they go into nature to kind of get away,
which
they cultivate it.
To be fair to the monastic movement, it was not always a bad bad impulse.
Often this was mission work or other things as well. But yeah, there is, I think, nature becomes romanticized as this thing that, you know, does. And this is, I think, but the desert fathers are so fascinating. You mentioned them because many of them are getting away. And to be fair, there's people coming into the church now who are barely catechized after the great persecutions, especially. But as Christianity becomes more accepted in the empire, and it is, the church doesn't seem to be as committed, like all the members, as committed as you had to be before. And there's a rigor maybe that feels lost. But you read the sayings of the Desert Fathers, and how often don't you hear them saying, you know, I went out to the desert to get away from sin, and now I'm more tempted than I ever was before. And they often project this, right? They'll talk about demons, and that, and not saying demons aren't real, but sometimes it also becomes convenient to project my own sinful nature on an external thing, because then I can kind of analyze it and think about it.
There's an attempt to get away from your responsibility. Right.
But then often they're great insights, and they can be very biblical, spiritual insights, are that you're going to take it with you wherever you go, because your neighbor that's the human being, right, you're also the same thing. And that, I mean, that gets the importance of human nature. But there maybe a third, you had two kind of there. Hey, maybe one, if I can enter just a, yep, go ahead.
You don't become more holy by going away.
Yep.
You become more holy because Christ has made you holy and will do holy things through you. And in order for that to happen, you need to have a neighbor.
Yeah, and I think you hit, you know, two reasons for withdrawal. One would be self-righteousness, but the second, you know, kind of getting away from the sins of neighbor or neighbor as problem. Maybe the third would be shame, right? That I don't feel like I have a place to be in community as well. And that's one also that we see in the Gospels, where Jesus restores public sinners or those who have been isolated, lepers, etc., to community as well. So maybe that third of shame can be one as well, where one might isolate themselves. I don't think that's a big one for our purposes today, but I think it's maybe one to keep in mind. And maybe plays into the Christian temptation to withdraw sometimes, because maybe we do internalize cultural criticisms, and it's easier to just be ashamed and keep things to ourselves. That, you know, rather than like this bold confession-making withdrawal, it can more be, well, it's just easier to just, you know, I'm just this whatever, and so I'll just keep to myself. That maybe can play in as well. Jason, we haven't let you say much.
No, I think you're right. I mean, that shame, I mean, that shame thing especially, I mean, sometimes it's, you know, you hear that, well, it's just easier if they don't know I'm a Christian, you know, or if, and so you can just kind of sit by quietly and, you know, you do your thing. I was thinking, too, as we're talking about this, I think in some ways, you know, this monastic impulse, but I think, you know, it's that desire to check out, right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking about, you know, as we're talking about this, is that, you know, just that idea of, I think, and maybe it's just in what I've been reading lately, or maybe my own personal tendency, that, you know, it's not this idea of wanting to become better, you know, and maybe that's because, as, you know, Lutherans, we kind of have that part beaten out a little bit, you know, in a you know, most sanctified sense of the word, right?
Every day I want to put a couch in the front yard and open up a 30-pack of Beast and give up.
Yeah, right.
We all do.
But this idea of checking out is so appealing. I mean, I think, you know, we're in an election cycle right now, and, you know, I think this is one where you see, you know, the temptation to get either super involved in politics, or just, nope, I'm going to wash my hands of this and be completely done. I'm checking out of the whole thing because it's just, you know, bad and worse, and, you know, I don't want anything to do with that. And, you know, I think, you know, in my thinking about this, that it's that frustration, or, you know, whether it's disgust or whatever term you want to use for that, I think that is the biggest temptation of the causes that we're talking about, the way I see it. But
yeah, I think there's that impulse to get away. And, mm-hmm. and finally, it's still a tinge of self-righteousness, right? I just don't want to mm-hmm. deal. I'm better than that. Or you say, oh, well, I'm not good enough to do that, I just give up. Well, that's a little bit of a self-righteous, curved word, inward thing, too. I'm judging myself on something other than what Christ has done mm-hmm. for me
and
called me to do.
Something that's, I guess, hitting me is with what both of you are saying is, and this maybe fits with our previous episode, is it perhaps especially tempting to check out today because it's so easy to check out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mentioned with technology that should connect us more than ever, and that was the hope. We've actually become more lonely. But there's, I can withdraw. There, escapism is easier than it ever was before. I literally can shut myself in my house and live in a virtual world, right? Yeah. Whether that be with games, which I'm not, I enjoy playing Madden as much as anyone. Whether that be with social media and largely knowing the world through mass media, you know, carefully curated views of it. You think of the growth of like virtual reality as a field that people are really looking at as being like the next big technological, you know, innovation that people are going to make money off, and we'll have. You know, you see these people with the things around their eyes, and you're going to have the virtual world. It you know, maybe it is. I mean, it was in retrospect, it was a funny thing for us as Gen X,
yeah,
where we had, you know, grunge music, and it was like hip to be disillusioned.
Yep.
And I still think one of the all time great music videos is "Smells Like Teen Spirit."
Yeah,
you know, but it was kind of like this. Yeah. It's cool to be disillusioned. You know, we're kind of going to check out whatever. But, like, we were doing that all together.
Yeah.
Like, you went to the concert, and we're all disillusioned together. You know, you wore your flannel or whatever else. And now, like, it's not a together thing that we really can check out in ways that we couldn't before. It's sometimes online. I spend too much time on Reddit. But you'll have someone who'll just reply to someone, "Touch grass." And you know what they mean is like, go outside.
Uh-huh.
And I do wonder, even amongst clergy, if we get in, you know, I've been there before where I'm getting a little bit too much of my interaction through social media and a little bit too much of my view of the church through social media. Like, all of a sudden, I'm super concerned about something that's going on in a different church body in a different state.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sucked into this thing, and I've lost perspective because I've lost, right. I've forgotten the primary neighbors that God has put in my orbit, and I think you're probably, it pains me to say it, I think you're onto something there, Jason. That maybe that is the biggest is the idea of checking out, and it's odd because. In the past, you had to check out by going off the grid.
Right.
Now we check out by kind of just diving into the grid.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I think so. I think you're right in saying that, you know, this might be the, you know, one of the most unique temptations for Gen X, you know, that because this has been a big part of our persona going back a long time.
Whatever,
right? Yeah. Exactly. And yet,
I bet Mike doesn't see himself as Gen X. Mike, do you see yourself as Gen X?
I don't know where I am. I don't. Whatever.
You were listening to Led Zeppelin, not Nirvana, or did you listen to Nirvana too?
Mostly Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Well, you talked about Smashing Pumpkins, though. Yeah. So you know, okay. I mean that they're pretty mm-hmm. solidly.
Yeah.
But the other thing that talking about the technology thing, and kind of that impact, and I think. Connecting back to vocation is, I think sometimes, you know, with the social media and these things that are so available and so at your fingertips online, you know, like there's this temptation to think that, you know, what I have to do to change, I have to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's this, that if I'm not out there doing something huge, if I'm not doing something world changing, then I can't make a difference. And I think, you know, to me, this is one of those things where that becomes a, well, then I may as well just give up. But, you know, this is where I think the vocation thing is so important because, you know, you're not necessarily, it's not necessarily your vocation. You're not necessarily called to go out and change the world. You know, mm-hmm. You are to interact with your neighbor and do the good thing, the right thing where you're at. And I think this is one where I think you see in some of the Tolkien works, you know, which is a little bit, I don't want to get too far down a rabbit hole, but I think, you know, this the whole thing with hobbits, and I think this idea in the Hobbit movies, to nerd out maybe just a little bit, you know, not
have
too
you
much.
Seen the Hobbit movies, Jason? Or Michael? I have not either, but all right, go ahead, Jason.
But this idea of, you know, ordinary deeds, everyday deeds of ordinary folk interacting, people that are closest to them, like this is what is good. This is what, these are the things that can change the world, not, you know, one great act of heroism, mm-hmm. but you doing something that is maybe as everyday as it comes, but it's something that is done to someone who is closest to you. And that makes a huge impact for them, which then tends to build on itself. And I think that's where, you know, seeing that connection back to vocation, you know, is not, you know, you're not called to change the world, but you're called to live out the vocations that are right there in front of you. And, oh, lo and behold, guess what happens as you do that?
Yeah. And I think we see this in history too, where you'll see, you know, contemporary nations, contemporary societies that face very similar challenges, and one makes it through better than the other. And often when you look at why, people want to look at, well, this had the better policies, the better leader. And that plays a role, but I mean, social and cultural historians, you know, the more you look into things and you get down to street level, part of it is communities kept doing basic community. Mm-hmm. They took out the garbage. They swept the streets. You know, their kids went to school, or you know, they went to work. They did the basic functioning things. Whereas maybe in the other one, people gave up and said, "What's the point?" And the first thing to go was the everyday works, the ordinary. Which then, I don't care what leader or what policy you have, it's almost impossible to weather a storm. We saw this with COVID, where who did we call essential workers? Largely the people we called essential workers were people that the rest of the time we don't think that much about or value maybe as much as we ought. And there
realized how many of us were not essential.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to throw this out there, and based on, you know, what you're saying, I'm not speaking clearly enough. Would I be wrong to say that perhaps the partisanship we see in our own day as well is withdrawal, right? The only way I can get to partisanship is by withdrawing from neighbor, because I have to be very selective now about who my neighbor is and what team I'm on. And so seldom is my neighbor now someone who God has given me, right? It's not the person that's been put in my life, but it becomes very selective. And I'm going to withdraw to my people who have my thoughts, right, and agree with me. And there's self-righteousness in that, right? We're the good people. The other people are the bad people. I think there's disillusionment in that. The world is going to hell in a handbasket, and these other people are to blame. I think there is perhaps a little bit of the giving up on a lot of relationships that... over silly things, you know, that we don't agree over tax policy or something like that. But is maybe connected to this, the heightened, and I don't just mean political partisanship. I think we say sometimes everything is political, and I think it's become that to a degree. But that it's sometimes withdrawal just to demonize, to decide this is the group. And perhaps we do that even in the church, where Christian and non-Christian becomes a line that it wasn't originally meant to be, when you consider we're an evangelistic religion, that Jesus seldom says, go and love your neighbor, but first ask if they believe like you do. Is partisanship evidence of this temptation to withdraw? Even as it sometimes seems like we're not withdrawing because we're getting hyperactive in something.
My gut reaction is to say, yes, of course you're wrong. But no, I think there's something to that, I think, and that idea of, especially since I think, you know, that tends to, you know, remove neighbor from the person who's right in front of you.
Even we hear this in the church when you get the sermons or the talks that are always just about, everything's so bad out there. And
yeah.
And you know that, and then there's us, and then there's just, sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no, that was, I was going to say, I didn't want to talk too much. I basically wanted to give you a hard time to say, yes, of course you're wrong. But I think that idea of taking neighbor as something other and something out there, you know, or missing that, the person right in front of you. And sorry, Mike, I cut you off there. But
no, I think you can, that wouldn't it be nice if everybody who's conservative lived in Texas and everybody who is liberal lived in Massachusetts, right? Well, that's a withdrawal by withdrawing somebody else from your, or you move. Like, how many times do you hear about people like, well, I'm leaving California for this, or the threats to move to Canada?
Which, you know, and then, of course, you know, threats to move, but never,
right.
Never following through.
But people do move. Yeah. They do move from Illinois to Wisconsin because it's slightly less liberal. Or I just, you know, the NAACP just came out with an encouragement or warning. I don't know what the right word there is for black athletes not to go to college in Florida. Because of, DeSantis' so-called attack on DEI stuff, right? So that's a withdrawal, right? Church shopping is a withdrawal, right? I don't want to go there. I don't want to be the person that actually is there to change and help. I just want to go where it's comfortable and easy. Well, you're withdrawing, right? You're withdrawing. I think that's a large problem, right? You then end up, I don't like the term echo chamber, but you know what I mean. I'm just going to go and I'm going to hear what I want to hear.
Yep.
Right? And it's easier that way, or you think it's easier that way, but it becomes, I think, again, it's a, as we said last time, it's a law answer to a law question, where instead of true freedom, you're trying to run away from having to deal with hard things and having to think and read. And when you get there, you're going to realize that it ain't going to be that great.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be even worse off in the end.
And maybe there's, now to be fair to the monastics, there is a lesson that they maybe can teach us. And that is, I said in passing, somewhat joking last episode, but ora labora, prayer and work, right? That at the heart and core of the Christian life is prayer and work. And they could have just said, well, just prayer. Like, who wants to do work? You know, we're going to come together and we're just going to pray, or pray and study. And study would have gone with prayer, yeah, right?
Prayer,
you're meditating.
Worship, study, meditation.
Yeah, that all would have fallen in there. But that is, they're right. That at the end of the day, that is the Christian life. But to do that, for and with neighbor, and there's room to withdraw sometimes, to recharge, to be formed by the word and contemplation, but then there's the point in community. And I think something that Western monasticism got right is that as monasticism got imported from the East, in the West, increasingly they said, we got to do this in community. Like, it's not good for man to be alone. You know, this just shouldn't be, we each go and we do our own thing. And there was a recognition then of the importance of community. And if you read, like, the literature, a lot of the role of the abbot was helping people learn to live with brothers that they didn't always like. to live together with the challenges that come in relationship. And maybe that ora and labora is not a bad refrain for us in our day.
And that, you know, this history of monasticism, especially in the West, is wrapped up in celibacy, right? So a lot of this, like you said, was mission work. These were the people who were going to make copy manuscripts. They were going to set up schools. They brewed beer. They made stuff, right? This has been a completely different story if you were sending out four families instead of four monks that had to be celibate, right? And we see, I think, a good thing today, within the Christian Church, and our synods, our little synod of the Wisconsin Synod is doing this a little bit more. Is like, okay, we're going to start a mission. Got some people that are willing to, you know, semi-retired, go out there, portable jobs, or college students. You want to go be a core member of this church while you go to grad school, or while you just work for a while. That was probably at best the impulse of the Western monastic. We're gonna send people all the way to the British Isles and work our way back.
Yeah. And you know what I mean? You think of like an Augustine, and he is an important early monastic, so to speak, but he's also a bishop who's intimately involved in the daily life of his community. He never got to just be like, guys, leave me.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
How much time we have left? Because I want some.
We got like 4 minutes.
Okay, before we end, I have some Jason news.
Okay. I like this.
Ooh.
You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Jason, Greek for healing.
Healer, yeah.
Physician, right? So you have Jason in Greek mythology, right? The hero led the Argonauts. You have Jason the high priest in 2nd century Jerusalem. Mm. Jason the martyr, 3rd century. Here, Jason of Tarsus or Thessalonica, from the Bible, considered to be one of the 72 apostles. There is a footballer who just from Spain, just Jason.
Really?
From Spain? I didn't know that was a Spaniard.
Just Jason. Uh-huh. And then Jason Alexander, Jason Bateman, Jason Biggs, Jason Kidd.
Oh, yeah?
Quite a few basketball players and a couple rugby players. And there's 2 Jason Kennedys.
There are.
C celebrities.
Well, and the last sexiest man alive was Jason Kelce.
Oh, there you go.
And, yeah. So.
Sudeikis, Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's Teddy Lasso, huh?
Yeah, right.
That was a good show. That was one of the better. Yeah.
Jason Veritek.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Verduzzo. A lot of athletes on here.
Right.
I don't see any great statesmen.
No.
It's hard to be a statesman when your name's Jason.
Right. Yeah.
You know. But
there's still time to run.
But you could be a martyr. You could be a martyr.
Yeah.
A mythological hero into, you know, the arts and entertainment or a dumb jock. But statesmen, yeah. I don't see any.
I had not heard that the Jason of Thessalonica was considered to be one of the 72. That is news to me.
Yeah, I did. And now this
one of them was named Wade too, right?
Yeah. Now this is from Wikipedia, so you're gonna have to take that with a grain of
salt. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next, I promise. Next episode, we're gonna do famous Wades.
That's gonna be a hard list. Wade Boggs.
Wade Boggs.
All right, well, we will wrap up with that, and whether you're named Jason or not, even on those days when you're tempted to withdraw, we pray that you will join us in delighting in neighbor as the saints that Christ has declared us to be, so that in joy and freedom you can let the bird fly. That's the wrong song. Why'd you do that, Jason? Stop hitting my buttons. I told you stop hitting the buttons.
Yeah, I'll try to keep my hands to myself over here.
You know what the other name my dad thought about naming me was?
What's that?
Mario.
That'd have been
awesome. Mario. Wade or Mario, if I'm remembering it.
Why Mario?
I don't. Why Wade?
I don't know.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you were sitting here recording with Mario Johnston?
Whole different dynamic.